start that there's a little bit of a story behind tonight's shiur, in that last night, the sefer which I wanted to prepare today's shiur from, I lost. For reasons which I won't go into because they make me feel like an imbecile, I lost it. And therefore this morning I was stuck because I called both sperm stores and other places and I couldn't get a hold of the sefer. So, therefore, in order to prepare this morning, I had to do some totally independent research. And in the course of this research, obviously the disadvantage was that it was harder, but the advantage was that I learned a number of new things which I had not known previously. And we'll see them tonight. And a few of them are very interesting. The first thing I want to talk with you is to digress a little bit about abortion and Christianity. Now, why is this interesting? Because it stems actually from a mistake in our Torah, which I didn't know about till this morning. We hold, in our law, abortion is not considered to be murder. Abortion in Judaism is not considered to be murder. It's considered to be some sort of less severe avera. Perhaps it's similar to murder. We mentioned many times already the poskim hold. It's something similar to shvichus damim, but it's not true shvichus damim. And the reason this is true is because it says in the Torah, Maka nefesh adam v'meis mos yumos, in order to be liable to death penalty, you have to kill a nefesh adam. And Rashi tells us that an ubar, a fetus, is not considered to be nefesh adam. That's in our Jewish law, and therefore you're not chayev to be put to death. And since you're not chayev to be put to death for killing an ubar, for killing a fetus, we have another halacha, Parshas Mishpatim. Parshas Mishpatim, it says, if you're fighting with somebody, and you happen to hit a woman who's pregnant in the course of your fight and she miscarries, so you have to pay for the value of the fetuses to the father of the children. Why the father, we'll see a little bit later this evening. But the significance of that is, obviously we see from this that that killing a feticide or abortion, whatever you want to call it, is not a capital crime. Why? Because if it was a capital crime, the Talmudic principle which would kick in would be kim le b'rabimine. Anytime you commit a capital crime, even if you don't actually incur the death penalty, because you did it unintentionally, by accident, nonetheless, there can never be, in a case which is a capital crime, a monetary payment. So therefore, if we see that there is a monetary payment in the case of abortion, in the case you caused the woman to miscarry, by definition, feticide, killing a fetus, is not considered to be a chiyuv misa, can't be considered to be true ritzicha shvichus damim, like murder is. However, the interesting thing is that if there is a translation of the Torah called the Septuagint. Now, I was taken aback by this, because the Septuagint in our tradition is held to be a reliable translation. The Septuagint was allegedly the translation written by the 70 Zkenim, the 70 elders, who King Talmai of Egypt, a Greek king of Egypt, called together to translate the Torah, and we have a Medrash which tells us that he put them in 70 separate rooms, and they all came up with the exact same translation, and where they decided to change, because it sounded funny, they all changed together, they all made the same changes, such as the famous case in Parshas Bereishis, Nasa Adam Etzamenu Kidmusenu, we will make God, they all changed it to I will make God. And so on and so forth. It turns out, however, the Septuagint became corrupted over the years. And Septuagint in Greek literally means the translation of the 70. We don't know if the Septuagint, which we actually have, that Greek version, has anything to do with the original legendary translation of the 70 elders in Egypt. And there are corruptions in it. And one of the corruptions happens to be in this Poskim Mishpatim, which describes the payment of feticide. When you kill fetuses, that you pay the father. The pasuk there says, "V'masoniye v'nasata nefesh tachas nefesh," which we translate the word as, you know this. We translate the word ason to mean tragedy. It's a pasuk also in a couple of weeks parasha. Yaakov Avinu says to Yehuda, Reuven, whoever it was, "Don't take Binyamin down to Egypt." Why? Because something will happen on the way, v'karo ason, and some tragedy will occur, and he's going to suffer. That's our translation. So what do we explain? We explain pasuk im ason yeh, if there'll be a tragedy and somebody gets killed, then v'nasata nefesh tachas nefesh. Then death penalty kicks in. You put the person who killed the other person to death, assuming it was done intentionally. But look what the Targum HaShivim, look what the Septuagint has. Take a look here. This is a photocopy, I have to tell you, from a book by a conservative scholar, David Feldman. He writes here on the bottom, the top left-hand side. The last paragraph in the top left-hand side. This critical text, to begin with, has an alternative version in the Septuagint. The Greek translation of the Bible produced in Alexandria in the 3rd pre-Christian century. A change of just one word there yields an entirely different statute on the subject. Professor Victor Aptarowitzer's essays analyze the disputed passage. The school of thought it represents, he calls the Alexandrian school, as opposed to the Palestinian, that is the Talmudic view set above, forth above. The word in question is ason, rendered here by us as harm, tragedy. Hence, if there be harm, thou shalt give life for life. The Greek renders ason as form, yielding something like, if there be form, then thou shalt give life for life. Came at the right point. The life for life clause is thus applied to fetus instead of mother, and the distinction is made, as Augustine will formulate it, between embryo informatus and embryo formatus. For the latter, the text so rendered prescribes the death penalty. Among the church fathers, the consequent doctrine of feticide as murder was preached by Tertullian in the 2nd century, who accepted the Septuagint, and Jerome in the 4th, who did not. Jerome's classic Bible translation renders the passage according to the Hebrew text accepted as the church. Nonetheless, though, the Didash, a handbook of basic Christianity for the instruction of converts from paganism, follows the Alexandrian teaching and specifies abortion as a capital crime. Closer to the main body of the Jewish community, we find the doctrine accepted by the Samaritans and Karaites, and more importantly, by Philo, the popular first century philosopher of Alexandria. On the other hand, his younger contemporary Josephus bears witness to the Palestinian halachic tradition. Aside from its textual warrant, this true tradition is more authentic than the latter tendency, which in addition is not genuinely Jewish, but must have originated in Alexandria under Egyptian-Greek influence. Amazing. What happened was, there's somebody translated ason in this pasuk as meaning a form. And that gave rise to an entire different interpretation of the pasuk. What it meant then was that if the fetus has a form, in other words, let's say beyond the first trimester when generally it takes on a more or less human form, then the penalty is death. Because ason no longer refers to if you kill the mother, but if you kill the fetus which has a form. And that's why the church, as a result, became opposed to abortion, because of that translation. And it's interesting that not only the church, but the Alexandrian Jews, who were influenced by this translation, you know, that was Lahavdil, the Sansino Chumash of the day, the Hertz Chumash, so they had this Alexandrian Chumash, and they were influenced, and Philo thus came to the conclusion that a formed fetus incurs the death penalty for the person who kills it. Yes. So he claims here, I don't know where he gets this from, that the opinion came first and then the translation. That it was an Egyptian-Greek influence. Who knows? In any event, that's one reason, an interesting one, why the Christians are very against abortion. Another reason, which is very interesting, he brings down on the next, on the left-hand side, on the bottom. If abortion is not murder in the rabbinic system, neither is it worse than murder. It is worse than murder in those religious systems concerned with the ensoulment of their fetus. At a conference some time ago on the subject, I was made bold to say that the discussion for the past several sessions of the conference was monumentally irrelevant. They had been debating the time of ensoulment. Does the soul enter the fetus at conception, at the end of the first trimester, at birth? From the Jewish standpoint, this must be declared irrelevant. It's not when does the soul enter, it's what kind of soul enters. Classic Christianity has been saying that a tainted soul enters the fetus, which must be cleansed by baptism to save him or her from eternal perdition. In line with the doctrine of original sin, each individual soul inherits the taint of its primordial ancestors. When Saint Fulgentius of the 6th century was asked when that stain attaches to the person, he replied that it begins with conception. Hence the concern with allowing the fetus to be brought to term so that it can be baptized. Otherwise, it is condemned to death in both worlds, making abortion clearly worse than murder. It must accordingly be said that when Catholics reputedly decide to let the mother die rather than allow an abortion, they are not at all being cruel, merely consistent with a logical concern. The mother has been presumably baptized as an infant. Let her die and go to her reward. But let the child be brought to term and baptized and saved from perdition. So sincere is this concern that theologians at the Sorbonne in the 19th century invented a baptismal syringe wherewith to baptize a fetus in utero in the event of a spontaneous abortion, a miscarriage. Kiddush number 2 is amazing. So in other words, what they're saying is that, I'm glad you're all shaking your heads, that's the right response. In essence, what they're saying is that since there's a tainted soul, there's a damned soul which is entering the fetus at conception, therefore, if they don't carry the child to term and are able to baptize it, so which saves it from this original sin, then they're committing this child to hell for the rest of eternity. So therefore, it's worth it even to allow the mother to die. Even when the mother's in mortal danger, it's worth it in order that the child be born, in order that the child be baptized. Because otherwise, it's sunk. So therefore, he brings down a few interesting exchanges he had on the bottom. I'm not going to read it with you inside, but you can take a look at yourself. A couple on the right-hand side, a couple of interesting exchanges he has with Christians about abortion. And they hold that choosing life, the right to life, doesn't just mean the right to life in this world, but the right to life in the world to come. Because if the child isn't born and baptized, it gets no life in the world to come. So that's why they're pro-life, for those two reasons. Now, there is something which we have to deal with later on, which we will get back to. Theologically, how do we allow abortion? And even in cases in which it's mutter, lemaisa. If we say that the fetus does receive a neshama, okay, he says it depends what kind of neshama, but be that as it may, if we say the fetus does receive a neshama, and it's a question when the neshama actually enters the fetus. There's several different sources of the Gemara. Perhaps at conception, perhaps at 40 days, perhaps at 3 months. It's an open question. But if we say there is a neshama, how do we tackle an abortion? Okay? We'll come back to that later on when we get to the tzitzeliezer. So, this is the Christian view of abortion, and obviously they're going to be very machmir based on that. Let's go from this very machmir view to the very most makel view which we have within normative halacha, which is the Tzitz Eliezer. And the Tzitz Eliezer is 18 points. That's on the second page at the top. 18 points of kulos for abortion. I'll go through them quickly. This is a summary. And we'll try and know when other people argue. Aleph. Benoach nerag al uborin. If a guy commits an abortion, he's killed for it. The H dash ain't on Iraq, there is an opinion which that he's not killed. Bez Yisrael ain't on Iraq, everybody agrees that a Jew is not killed for abortion or feticide. Gimel 3, Kshiesh Tzorech, when there's a necessity. Vadin Nosin and Alocha says, Shemutar Lusadar Lisha Apollo, that is permitted to give a woman an abortion. Yesh Lahadiv Lavatzea Zosaide Rofe Yisrael. It's better that a Jewish doctor do it. Why? Because a Jewish doctor obviously has a less severe Isser. Why? Because the Jewish doctor, the proof that it's a less severe Isser is the fact that a Jew can never be put to death for abortion. Whereas a Goy, according to most opinions, is put to death for performing an abortion. So therefore, it's always better to get a Jewish doctor. Dalid, Yesh lachmir besidur hapolo milakum, we have to be more stringent when we arrange abortions for Goyim mil Yisrael than arranging abortions for Jews. Basharheim ha-metzumim gam mulborim, because they are enjoined. It's a form of murder for them to kill fetuses. And not only that, if we facilitate an abortion for a guy, and there was nobody else who would have done it, then we transgressed the aveir of lifne iver. We're not allowed to facilitate a guy transgressing things which are forbidden for the guy. If we do so, we ourselves are transgressing the aveir of lifne iver. As long as there's nobody else who can facilitate it for him. umikoshken, and it's obvious she also zos kshaloni shkevet sakon leisha. It's also to do an abortion for a guy if there's no danger for the mother. Ukmochen, furthermore, kshiyesh mitzvah l'sader apolo akum, even when we can be permitted to do an abortion for a guy, yesh lizor she asks a rofe Yisrael, it's best if a Jewish doctor does it. There are those who hold that even though a Jew is not killed for killing an ubar, nonetheless it's forbidden midoraisa. And we mentioned possibilities last week. Perhaps it's the issue of wounding, where it's not allowed. Perhaps it's the issue of theft, where you're stealing from the ubar's life. Whatever issue it is, perhaps it's an issue midoraisa. Avav. There are those who say that even midrabanan ha'isur sheyesh b'zeh, the isur is kukolush, is very weak. Ches apinars atoris anister, based on Kabbalah, and we saw this Zohar last week. Ha'isur ba'polos uber chamur admo, is a very stringent isur in abortion. Tes. Where there's a danger for the woman, with a continuation of pregnancy, it's very easy to be matir abortion. Yud, even where there's not an actual life-threatening danger, but only a threat to the normal health of the woman. Ulishem refers in order to cure Ashkatas Machover or stop her pain, Agdolim, which is very great. Dorish Tavatsepos Uber, for that we require abortion. Avabishain Sakura Mamashis, even though there's no actual danger, Gamkin Yesh Makom Lati Lasosos, we can be Matir, Ukfira Os Enya Morba Matsab Shafarav, as the rabbi sees in the case before him. What? So far we pass like everything he says. Yud Aleph. Now this I don't know where he gets it from, but he says it's permissible to do this also when the woman is nursing. Not exactly. In other words, it says you're allowed to allow an abortion when a woman is nursing, so she can continue nursing, it seems. But that's not true in our day and age. Because in our day and age, just use formula.
He's reflecting back to the
Gemara. The time of the Gemara, yeah. Yeah. You'd, I don't know why it brings it down, though, in his summary. You'd base, Eishas Isha Zinsa. A married woman who was mizane or nanso raped, and she became pregnant. And even if she became pregnant from a goy, she'ena vlad mamzer. I don't know how many of you are aware of this, but if a married woman is raped by a goy, the child is not a mamzer. The child is only mamzer if she's raped or obviously commits adultery with a Jewish man. Okay? So in those cases, v'chazer b'tshuva, if she did tshuva, mitzatadim kama migdoli aposkim, several of the gdoli aposkim have reason, lahatir, to allow the sadar apol to make an abortion, imishum biziona, whether it's because of her embarrassment, imishum chil Hashem, or because of chil Hashem, ubgam, and damaged reputation, ubizoyon, and embarrassment, hamishbacha, for the family. V'imishum liyumukim achim, perhaps for other reasons, haniskram bifnim, which he mentioned before. In these cases, to do an abortion within 40 days of the conception, and even within 3 months, Meir Yona, from the time of conception, who killed Barbe, is much more lenient than doing it afterwards. And therefore, he says there is reason to do the abortion before the first trimester is over, as long as the fetus is not yet moving. And here comes his chiddush, also where there is a legitimate suspicion that the child which will be born will be a damaged child and have great pain. Okay, well, this is a big. Now, on Yud Beis and Yud Gimel, we have the great arguments. First of all, some poskim are not matir, even in case of rape, abortion after the first 3 days. There's some who are matir up to the 40th day, but some who are machmir, and after the first 3 days, when already the embryo is implanted in the uterus, they don't allow abortion to take place. And there are many poskim who hold, and we'll come to this a little bit later, that no matter what the situation of the fetus, we do not do abortions at all for problems with the fetus. Okay, we'll come back to that. Yudalit me'idach, on the other hand, la'amisa v'lach she'isha shevis kva'al marshber, to kill the child when the woman is already in labor, v'avlat kvar nekar latzeis, and the child is on the way out, who chomer b'harbe, is very, very serious me'lifnei shenekar than before he's on his way out. Ve'en lati v'kon zekim, v'mokom sakonah shel mamash l'isha, and this is not permissible unless there's actual danger to the woman. Of course, once the head is out, then abortion is not permitted under any circumstances. Tetzvav, gam b'mokom shadin nosin lahatir apola, even where abortion is permissible, mikom makom nonetheless, yeshu kabbal askal kakam askama sabal, you have to receive permission of the husband, ki mamono hu, because the fetus belongs to him. Tezayin, ken yesh l'chazer l'sadir apola yedei shesiyas refua, it's best to do the abortion by drinking some sort of substance, or of course taking a pill, me'asiyas ma'isi b'yadayim, than doing it with your own hands, because then we said it's more mutter because of the groma. Something which is caused indirectly as opposed to done directly with one's hands, according to many poskim, although not all poskim, we mentioned Shlomo Zama does not agree, is more lenient. Yud Zayin, Isha Shechola B'machla Mesukenes, a woman who is sick with some dangerous sickness, Shomedes Lamusimena, which she'll die from it, V'herayon Shehora Bo, Imihim Shech Bo Yikar Misasa, and if she continues her pregnancy, it's going to bring her death closer. Vaicha mischanenes, and the woman is pleading shalola side of Lapola, not to abort a fetus. Vlo ichbalon, she doesn't care if they yikari misasa, if this is going to make her die. Ubiuvat, she yishar achrei azecha, as long as she leaves a kid. Yesh mokom lahati lios pizeshe valtasa, we can be meikel and not abort the fetus. Yuches, finally, kol b'nei Yisrael muzharim ba'asar ha'chamura, all of Am Yisrael strictly forewarned, lonely no kalus rosh, not to be light-headed and frivolous, b'avsokas ha'riyon about abortion. V'achrayus gedola mutola b'zeh ala shoel, and there's a tremendous responsibility both on he who asks, ve'el nishal, and the person who is asked. Mivad, especially, ma'ashiyesh b'zeh mishum gidu apirtzas ha'prutzos, in order to make sure that there's not a lot of pritzos, v'azoni ma'achreim, and a lot of znus, because otherwise you allow abortions, it's much easier to get into situations of that sort. Shugam umas olam gadru atzom b'zeh, even the goyim, this was written many years ago, were against abortion. V'titu takonis v'onshim chamurim, and they made laws and strict punishments and penalties al ovrim on those who transgress abortion v'sayim and assist v'sol kadoshim emo, and we are holy people. Okay, this is the most lenient opinion about abortion. It's critical that we realize that this is the most lenient opinion, because now we're going to see opinions which are more machmir. First of all, however, here on the bottom is a photocopy from one of Rabbi Bleich's book. It's interesting. You know, there was this case in Florida a few months ago. I forget exactly what malady the infant which was born was suffering from. But the parents wanted to harvest organs one by one from this infant which had no chance to live. What was it? And no brain. And in order to keep other children alive. So that's not permitted according to Halacha. According to Halacha, you're not allowed to hasten the death even of somebody who's a trefa. Even if somebody's not going to live, you know he's not going to live. And if you killed him, you'd taka be potter. You wouldn't be put to death for killing such an infant, because the infant has a deformity, a mortal wound, from which will die for sure. No question. Nonetheless, you're not allowed to hasten the death of a trefa. And therefore, you're not allowed to harvest the organs from the trefa's body. And you're not allowed to kill a baby, no matter how deformed the baby is. If the baby could have survived, despite gross deformities, and you kill it, you're chayev misa. You're put to death for it. Interesting, Shaili, you take a look here at the bottom, a famous Sefer Chassidim, it seems. In the second paragraph, of the on the left-hand side, in the middle, the 13th century authority, Rabbi Yehuda the Pious, Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, issued the definitive ruling forbidding the termination of the life of a monster-like child born with the teeth and tail of an animal. Indeed, the interlocutor raised the question only because of fear aroused by reports that the creature would later eat people. A later authority ruled unequivocally that the killing of even a grotesquely malformed child possessing animal features constitutes an act of murder. The issue of a human mother, no matter how deformed, enjoys human status and may not be destroyed either by overt act or by passively allowing it to die of starvation. By extension, The same thing applies to a fetus. These considerations apply with equal weight to the destruction of an abnormal or deformed fetus. Accordingly, the consensus of contemporary authorities is that pregnancy may not be terminated, even if it is known that the baby has suffered damage as a result of rubella contracted by the mother through ingestion. It should be, or through ingestion of thalidomide, some sort of thalidomide, some sort of drug which causes birth defects, or as a result of a congenital defect. Those authorities who adopt an opposing view and permit an abortion during the early stages of pregnancy do so not on the basis of the deformity per se, but in consideration of the physical and psychic difficulties the rearing of such a child will place upon the mother. In the light of the multifaceted factors which must be assessed in reaching halachic determination, rabbinic advice should be sought on a case-by-case basis. Okay, so here we have a very important principle. Even those such as the Tzitzit Eliezer who are makel are only makel on the basis of the mother's necessity, not on the basis of the fetus's necessity. We always assume that no matter how poor a quality of life the child will have, it's better for the child to be born and live than to be killed in the womb without ever having lived. Now, maybe the child many years later will say to you, to his parents, you know what, I wish you had aborted me. So what? That's not, first of all, he's not allowed to say that. It's not up to him. Secondly, that's irrelevant. The point is that we have to take into consideration that we have to give the child life because life is the way to do Torah, mitzvahs, and avodas Hashem, and we have to give the child life in that case. Yeah.
So there have been accepted authorities that have allowed abortion of deformed fetuses on the basis of mother.
The basis of mother, yeah, only the basis of mother. That's right. Yes, we'll get that. We'll come to this in a moment.
That would go along with what you said regarding Tzitzit Eliezer in terms of pain.
We will come back to Tzitzit Eliezer. He's the next on our list. Now, the Tzitzit Eliezer, in fact, has a tshuva about Down syndrome specifically. I recall somewhere, I think that somebody has a tshuva about rubella as well, but I couldn't find it. It was in that sefer which I lost last night. So we have here just a tshuva about Down syndrome. And he was asked two questions. He was asked, A, if the hospitals are allowed to perform amniocentesis, in other words, to test for Down syndrome, and B, he was asked if they find Down syndrome, are they actually allowed to perform an abortion? So why is amniocentesis a problem? There are two problems with amniocentesis. A, there's a halacha by an animal. If an animal, a cow, has a puncture wound from the outside of the animal into the womb, that's considered to make the animal trefa. You can't eat such an animal, according to some opinions. So Tzitzit Eliezer was asked, so maybe you're not allowed to form an amniocentesis because you are creating in the woman the same type of wound which would consider to be a trefa by an animal. And that's obviously to make somebody a trefa could be considered tantamount to killing the person. So the answer Tzitzit Eliezer gave to that is not true. This is a famous principle stated by the Chazon Ish already, that the dinim of trefa by human beings are not the same dinim as trefa by animals. By animals, we have a static halacha of trefa which Chazal determined for us. Whatever Chazal determined to be trefa is considered to be treif, and we can't eat it when it's an animal. In terms of human beings, trefa is only considered to be what modern medicine at that stage in history cannot heal. Anything that medicine can heal is not considered to make somebody a trefa. And therefore, if our medicine is advanced to the point where if there's a puncture wound of this sort, we can heal it, then we're not concerned that there'll be any long-term damage, then that's not considered to be making the person do a trefa, and one is allowed to go ahead and perform such an operation. That's point number one. The second point, however, he was asked was, what about lifnei iver? Let's say you perform an amniocentesis. Let's say you're a Jewish obstetrician, and you perform an amniocentesis on a non-Jewish woman. And she decides to have an abortion, a case where it would not be mutter al pi halacha for a non-Jewish woman to have an abortion. Are you transgressing lifnei iver lo titein michshol? you facilitated her having an abortion by doing the amniocentesis. Are you allowed to do it or not? So Titiliezer wants to say here too that Lifnei Iver does not apply. Why does Lifnei Iver not apply? Because in a case where you're not sure that the act that you're doing will actually develop into an Isser, Lifnei Iver may not apply. How so? A, the odds are overwhelming that the amniocentesis will come out with positive results. In other words, negative results. In other words, that there are no problems. And therefore, on that side, obviously there will be no abortion, at least not as a result of your coming along and performing the test. B, even if the person decides that even if there is a deformity, perhaps the person will decide that they'll go along and carry the pregnancy to term anyway. So therefore, since it's not necessary that you're actually going to come along and cause an issue to be committed by virtue of your doing the amniocentesis, you're allowed to do so. That, yeah. That's true. It's his other doctor's point wouldn't be leaf in the ear, but still would be a shalom esayeh de rever. But you're right, that would make it far less severe. Now, then he goes on to the question of actual abortion in cases of Down syndrome. And here he takes into account the principles which we spoke about 2 weeks ago in saying which cases it would possibly mutter. He says, first of all, we know that there are many poskim who hold, and we just saw a couple of them, we just saw some of these things in our summation a few moments ago, that the issur of abortion is only the Rabbanan. And besides, he said, even the many poskim hold that the fetus is not a nefesh. And the other poskim who say that on a fetus there is no issur of murder because the fetus never established itself as being actually alive. And besides that, we have Rabbi Yaakov Emden, who holds that there is the only issur of aborting a fetus is a relatively minor issur of wasting the male seed. And besides that, we have the Rav Polim, who even was matir abortion, wanted. He didn't actually go ahead and be matir, but he wanted to be matir in abortion, even in a case where there's an embarrassment for the family as a result of the pregnancy. So he says, based on all these factors, in a case where there'll be terrible and insufferable mental anguish for the parents, it's possible to allow an abortion. And I have to bear in mind that the Tzitz Eliezer is the most lenient posek on this score. Many, many, many poskim of great stature argue with him. They say, tough luck, suffer the mental anguish. There's one posek in Brooklyn who writes particularly sharply. He says, not about this per se, he's writing about birth control, but the same idea, he's writing about abortion, but at the end of the truva, he goes into the diatribe about birth control. And then he starts speaking, he says, you know, and the husbands come and say, well, we need to do it because our wives, they're going to go out of their minds. So he says, it's like this, he writes that, you know, the women, they go out to chasnas and they dance half the night away. And then, if in the middle of the night, once their child gets up and has to be quieted down, they complain. They can't take it. For chasnas, they can say, very sharp way of writing. For chasnas, they can take it. When it gets to quiet their child down, then they can't do it. And they say that it's a terrible burden to take care of so many children. And when they're willing to go out to work with children charged their own and go teach in schools their whole day. So that's, as he says, that there's a totally distorted perspective as to what's considered to be actual anguish and what's not. All right, so I think it's a kind of a narrow approach to things, but it's interesting the way he phrases it, very sharp phraseology. Well, I wouldn't go so far as to say fallacious logic. In his society, maybe it's not fallacious. Everything is sociological in these matters. Okay, so let's leave that alone. But in any event, the difficulty is, before we get into other poskim who argue, there's a theological difficulty which Tzitz Eliezer feels he has to address. The theological difficulty is, Lemaisa, isn't it God's plan that these parents have to deal with this child with, let's say, Down syndrome or a birth defect? One could come along and say, and he says, I'm sure that there are people who say this, that, you know, that's what God wanted you, this is the sign that God wanted to give you. Either because it's a punishment for the parents, or because this child must be born in order to be rectify the child's neshama in some way, and that these parents were chosen for that task because they could bear the difficulty of raising such a child. So therefore, says Tzitz Eliezer, maybe somebody will come to me and say, how could I be mati an abortion? For theological reasons, I should have to require the couple to carry the baby to term. So in order to answer that, he says there are two answers. First of all, the Chasam Sofer says, and this is a basic principle which we have to always remember, that you never mix Kabbalah, or for that matter, any agadita or hashkafa with psak halacha. Halacha and hashkafa are two separate disciplines in Judaism. We never mix the two. And therefore, if you have some theological difficulty, so you worry about the theology separately. You decide the halacha, and then you worry about the theology. You don't take theology into account in deciding halacha. The Chasam Sofer says, that's kilayim. It's like shatnez. You don't take the two, they don't mix. They're oil and water, they don't go together. The second thing he brings down is another Chasam Sofer. The Chasam Sofer speaks about the pasuk of Rapo Yirapei. Well, no, pasuk of Mishpatim, from here, Chazal learned from this pasuk, Mikan Shenitein Rishus L'Rofei L'Rapos. In this pasuk, we see that doctors were granted permission to heal. So the Chasam Sofer asks, why are doctors granted permission to heal? It's obviously God's plan that this person be sick. And how will the person get better? If God wills him to get better as a result either of tefillah or tshuva or some other reason, so why does the doctor have the right to intercede? So the Chasam Sofer, it's a little bit complicated Chasam Sofer, I'll try and simplify it somewhat. Chasam Sofer's basic principle is that God wanted the world to be run based on nature, on natural principles. That's why God created the world. He created a world in which things aren't just miraculous, one way or the other, but rather things are run based on nature. And therefore, whenever God sends a malady, he takes nature into account. In other words, God expects the person to, unless he's a very exceptional tzaddik, to deal with the malady or sickness in the normal fashion. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu will not interfere with the natural pattern and course of affairs, except in the case of very great rush or very great tzaddik. And if it's a very great rush or very great tzaddik, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will either save him or put him to death. The Kadosh Baruch Hu will either save him or put him to death, regardless of whatever the medicine does. Then a Kadosh Baruch Hu will go beyond the means of medicine and he'll make an ace. Either an ace to help the person or an ace to punish the person. But the Chasam Sofer, we always use medical knowledge, assuming that it's halachically permitted, in determining what the Ratzon Hashem is. So the same thing applies here. You can't say that the Ratzon Hashem operates in a vacuum without taking account what is medically viable, a viable medical option. The Ratzon Hashem can only be understood when you take into account the Derech HaOlam, the way of the world, which includes whatever medicine dictates. So therefore he says, when determining what should be the halacha in this case, we go after the halacha under existing medical conditions. Now then he goes on, he backtracks a little bit. Says, L'maisa though, you gotta have bitachon. He advises, even though he says that amniocentesis is mutar al pi halacha, he says one should have trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Since the percentage of deformities is so small, it's better to trust HaKadosh Baruch Hu and go along with the Ratzon Hashem, as is the normal pattern, without going and taking any sort of intervention. And of course, Baruch Hu will help you and things will work out fine. In the next shuv, as a matter of fact, he says it's not worth doing tests for Down syndrome, because he says that the risk, he's talking about in women over 35 years old, he says the risk of Down syndrome is like 1 or 2 in 100 births. And there is a risk in amniocentesis as well, that in 1 or 2 out of 100 cases, the amniocentesis itself will cause problems with the fetus. What? Okay, I tell you, that's what he brings down. Could be technology improved since 1979. What? Oh, for Down syndrome? He says it's only 1 or 2 in 100 after age 30. That's what he says. After 40? No, he's talking about a woman who's 39 years old here. Yeah. So he says it's 1 or 2 out of 100. So he says it's now worth taking, going through a procedure which has a 1 or 2 in 100 risk in order to avert the possibility of a 1 or 2 in 100 risk of Down syndrome. But again, I have to emphasize here that the other poskim will argue. Let's see the summary that Tzitz Eliezer, and then we'll just mention the other poskim will argue. Here in the bottom of page 3, in the third column from the right, B'sikum, right before the next tshuva begins. In summary, Aleph, Mutter laruch bedikas hebetim, one can make an amniocentesis, lafsokas herayon, in even where the option is the an abortion, kimenia lepigur sichli, from when there's some possibility of mental retardation, milchashash kilchashash shel mongoloidism, like a suspicion of mongoloidism, which is still the Hebrew term for Down syndrome. Beis b'mikosha b'dika marabi b'vitochan ubar mongoli, when it's shown as for certain that the fetus has Down syndrome, yesh kabel heter shel rab musmach, one should receive a heter of a well-known rabbi, Livtzias Bulas Havsokas Harayon, for an abortion. Gimel, B'makom, Makom Yuchan Nosaf L'Ras Heter Zeh, it's especially, it's easier to give a heter, Yeshna, in cases, Kasher Yuchul Vatzes Havsokas Harayon, when they can do abortion, Aydei Shesias Refua, by drinking some sort of medicine, or Zroka Zriko, or by doing some sort of a shot, a vaccination. Dalit, Nosaf Latzorach L'Kabola Saskam Asa Isha L'Vitzua Havsokas HaRayon, besides receiving the permission of the wife, Yesh L'Kabo Gam Askam Asa Balakach, one should receive also the permission of the husband on such. Now, the age 50, it's 10%? Okay. A lot of them argue. A lot of them, of course, every case would have to be decided on a case-by-case basis. But a lot of poskim argue and say that a kid who has Down syndrome is a normal kid, just like anybody else. Like we said before, that just because a kid is going to suffer from defects and problems in life doesn't deprive that child of the right to life. So since it doesn't deprive the child of the right to life, therefore, it would not be permitted to perform an abortion. But in essence, the argument is really has to be thrown back in the mother's court, in the parents' court. Because, again, even the Tzitz Eliezer agrees that we're not performing this abortion because of the child. We're performing the abortion because of the parents. It's just that if you are more lenient in terms of what the iser, the prohibition of abortion is, then you'll find more cases of parental anguish to be matir. Whereas if you are more machmir, you have a stricter view of what the prohibition of murder, of abortion is, that it's akin to murder or daraisa or such like, then you will find less cases of parental anguish which are truly serious enough to justify abortion. So it all goes back to the parents, and it's all a subjective view of A, the iser involved, and B, what kind of anguish the parents are going to undergo. And that's why each case has to be decided on a case-by-case basis. Yeah.
So nowadays.
There are
different poskim that
you can get an abortion. I know. In America, you probably won't find a poskim will be makel. This is just off the top of my head. Because in America, we don't have, because of the nature of psak in America is that poskim are very hesitant to pass in shilas of such grave weight. In Eretz Yisrael, you'll find poskim who are willing to paskin such shilas, and it's more likely they would find somebody who's makel on the basis of Tzitz Eliezer. Okay, general psak in Israel nowadays is far more, I don't know if the word is authentic, but far more, whatever. The psak is much more, actual postgame are much more prevalent in Eretz Yisrael than in Chutz Laretz. Well, decisive in Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Laretz. That's not relevant to tonight. Okay. It's because we have, the reason is because halacha is much less, has much less control over society here. Since we live in such a foreign milieu, so therefore the poskim don't paskin as much halacha l'maisa in Chutz Laretz. Since they don't paskin as much halacha l'maisa, right, hospitals are not turning to poskim with shilas here. Doctors are overwhelmingly not turning to poskim with shilas. So therefore, mimela, psak has become limited. It hasn't become so applicable l'maisa. In Eretz Yisrael, where these shilas mamish occur every day, and society has much more affinity to halacha, so therefore halacha is much more advanced in these areas. Okay. Finally, let's come into a very interesting issue here, which again I just discovered this morning. The question there's a question which Reb Zalman Nechemya Goldberg, Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach son-in-law, very big posik in Eretz Yisrael, deals with in terms of liabilities in cases of abortion. Now, liabilities in cases of abortion are twofold. A, let's say an abortion is committed against the will of one of the parties. For instance, let's say the mother in collusion with a doctor aborts the fetus without telling the father, or vice versa, somehow the father, together with the doctor or by himself, straps the woman down and aborts the fetus. Or let's say in the course of an abortion, any medical procedure, the child, it gets damaged in some way. It doesn't get killed, but it gets damaged. Who in that case is liable to pay to whom? Okay, that's a basic question. So we have a machlokas, we have a very, very basic difference of opinion as to who gets damages to an Uber. When an Uber, if somebody comes to you and hits you, so who gets the money? You do. What happens if somebody comes and hits an Uber, hits a fetus? Who gets money in that case? So it's a machlokas. The Rama holds that the Uber gets the money, that the child gets the money. Hi, the child, the fetus right now is not doesn't have a wallet, but you hold the money in escrow until the child is born, and then the child, of course, gets the money sometime later in life. According to the Rambam, though, it seems that the father actually owns the fetus. And since the father owns the fetus, therefore, the money should go to the father. Why do I say tzitz? So it says that it should go to the father. So Reb Zalman Nechemya Goldberg says that the reason why it should go to the father is because... messed myself up there. Why does it go to the... Why do I say it should go to the father? Says Reb Zalman Nechemya Goldberg, because Lamaisa, there's no case in the Rambam explicitly discussed where a fetus was damaged and not killed. They really couldn't do that in the old days. In the old days, when they damaged the fetus miscarried, and that was the end of it. So the Rambam never discusses explicitly a case where the fetus is, on the one hand, damaged, but on the other hand, not completely miscarried. So therefore, he's not 100% sure what is the halach in that case according to the Rambam, but it seems to him that the Rambam holds that the damages go to the father. And therefore, even though the kid is going to have to live a life with birth defects, Rachmana Litzlan, nonetheless, since it's the fetus is property of the father at that point in time, the father gets the money. If there is no father, it's property of the mother. The mother gets the money. What? No, the Ramah is not talking about such a case either. If you take a look, he says what the case the Ramah is speaking about, I think. It has to do with whether, because the Ramah holds, the reason the machlokas between the, it's on page 4, the machlokas between the Ramah and Rambam is in fact based on a case where the fetus dies. And in that case, where the fetus dies, the Rambam says the money goes to the father. The Ramah says, an interesting lashon, which sounds like, really the money should go to the Uber. But since the father is the Yoresh of the Uber, since the father is the immediate next of kin, and the heir of the Uber, that's why the money goes to the father. So in that, from the case by death, where the Ramah says that the reason why the father gets it is because he's the heir of the fetus, we can infer that a case where the fetus did not die, but rather was carried to Durham and survived with a defect, you don't resort to the heir who gets to keep the money, the fetus himself. Okay, so that's how we learned out from that case. Now, in that, he says, if it goes to the father, it even goes to the father in the case of Mamzerus. In other words, let's say the father had an adulterous relationship with a married woman. Doesn't matter. And the bottom line is that the father is the father. Whatever Averus he committed in order to conceive this child. And therefore, the damages would go to the father and not to the child himself. But on the other hand, he says, I'm not sure. Reb Zalman Nechemia Goldberg says, it's interesting, you know, like we just speak about, none of this was ever discussed before whenever this was written, 1988, whatever it is, the mid-80s. Because really, Halacha only advanced to this level of sophistication in the mid-80s. And in the Eretz Yisrael, they're asking the Shilas, because it's relevant to, actual monetary awards and courts and such like that. Chutz L'Eretz, the Shilas not being asked because we don't have our own court system. So that's why these things are discussed in Israel, not here. But in any event, he says he's not sure if there are any damages at all in a fetus which has been, let's say, aborted at less than 40 days old. Why? Because we mentioned already several times that a fetus less than 40 days old is considered like water. Maya ba'alma is the language used in the Gemara. So therefore, since it's considered maya ba'alma, just plain water, one could say that there are no damages. But on the other hand, maybe one could say that there are damages. If the kid himself is the person who receives the damages, like the Ramah says, so there was never any kid. Since there was never any kid, therefore there are no damages to be paid. But if the father receives the damages because his property was damaged, then maybe one would say, maybe, not 100% sure, maybe one would say that the potential life which was lost is in and of itself a damage, a tort against the father, which requires payment. Maybe not. Maybe we say it's not a damage. What if I take some water from you? That's not really damage. It's not worth any money. So therefore, perhaps there is no damages. He's not sure what the halacha is, and he remains with an open question. He doesn't know how to pass in the shaila in this case. Then he goes on to discuss something very interesting. He discusses, okay, these are damages. Now let's look at a different issue. The next issue is, what about physician-induced abortion with one of the parents' permission but not the other parent's permission? In other words, one of the parents went to the doctor, like we said before, and generally the mother, obviously, and has abortion induced by the doctor without permission. A, does the doctor have to pay at all? And B, if he has to pay, does he pay to the mother or to the father? So here he brings down the machlokes between the Tosfos and the Or Samech. Now, normally, an Or Samech doesn't argue on Tosfos. The Or Samech was a 20th century, late 19th century, early 20th century posik in Latvia, the Rav of Riga, the Rameir Simcha, not of Riga, of Dvinsk, the Rameir Simcha Cohen. But the Or Samech bases his interpretation on a Rambam. The Tosfos says that a fetus is a father's property. Outright, no question about it, a fetus is the father's property. Remeir Simcha, the Or Samech, says the fetus is the mother's property. Belongs to the mother. It's her body, belongs to her. So why does the father get paid? We have a pasuk in Torah. It says that if there's a miscarriage, when we started out with Imasonia, if there's a miscarriage, the money goes to the father. Why? If it's the mother's property and the mother, because it's the mother's body, so why does it go to the why does it go to the father? So he says special zeres kasef. What? Well, it's not mashma that works because of ishtoke gufo, not because in anything which the wife gets, the father, the husband gets, because then it's not necessarily true in all cases. Because you can say, whatever the case may be. So it's not mashim because of that. But in any event, so he says, especially because it's interesting to see his language. Here on the bottom on the right, he says, on the bottom of page four, bottom right of page four, he says in paragraph Vav, Rabbeinu, in the middle where the quotation starts, Rabbeinu Shepasak, the Ram Paskin, Shim Nogfal Isha Achar Mosa Baal, that if they damaged the, if the mother was hit after her husband died, Mishalim Dmei Vlodas Isha, that then the money for the dead fetuses goes to the mother herself. Mefarish Hacht Amu Be'erchin. He explains the Gemara in Erchin Dav Zayin, which we quoted already several times. Be'isha Yotzitz Lihore, a woman who's going out to be killed. The Eimam Tinalat Shetela, the Halacha says that if a woman is supposed to be executed and she's pregnant, you don't wait until she gives birth. Then the Gemara says, Pshita, obviously, Gufay, it's her body. Saka, Daita Chamina, and then the Gemara answers, no, I might have thought, Mamona the Baal Huvalo Nafsid. That it's the money of the husband, and we shouldn't make him lose his money. Kamash, and then we make him lose his money. Now, there are two ways of learning that Gemara. Tosfos learns that Gemara that it is the money of the husband, but nonetheless, the writ of execution, the death penalty, overrides that monetary value which the husband has, and we put him to death. We put the fetus to death inside the mother. The Rambam says the Or Samech learns no, that the conclusion of the Gemara is that the fetus is not the husband's property. It's not the father's property. It's the child's property. It's the property of the mother. And that's why we put the mother to death with the child in her, because this is the mother's property, just like she's put to death, her property, the child, the fetus, is put to death with her. And then he goes on. I'm going to skip down. He says in the fourth line from the end of the paragraph, fifth line from the end of the paragraph, we stop with Rabbeinu. It makes sense like the Rambam says, and not like Tosfos. The im no madav lo the same shalabal. If we're going to say that the fetuses belong to the husband, ukimamono when it's like his money, lo rishon liyarshav to give it over as an inheritance to his heirs. In Cain, if that's case, isha atzma nogfa ubara, then logic would dictate that where the woman herself aborted her fetus, onot lasam or took a drug, what? Some sort of drug or poison in order to abort, to Shalind May Vladis Labal, she should have to pay her husband for causing damage to her fetuses. Vizelo Shamanu, and we never found this such halacha, the Tzarech Lomar, therefore we have to say, the Kigufa Dami, they belong to their her body, Vinchel Atson, they belong to her. But if there's a father around at the time of the damage, Zachta Rachmana, the Torah came with a special law that he give the money la domi labal. When the Torah say this, only if other people damaged and caused her to miscarry. But if she herself damaged herself, lo chiva Torah l'shalin, the Torah didn't require her to pay. Now, Reb Zalman Chaim Goldberg has two explanations to Or Samech. Why the woman doesn't have to pay if she aborts, and by extension, why a doctor doesn't have to pay if he aborts with the permission of the woman. What are the two possible explanations? One is to say that the woman can say to the doctor, abort my fetus, and the doctor will be potter, just like we have Allah, if I come to you and I say, rip my clothing. You're allowed to do it, and he won't be chayev to pay. Normally, if you rip my clothing, you're chayev to pay, right? You have to pay because you damaged my clothing. But in a case where I gave you permission, so then it's okay. You don't have to pay for it. On the other hand, one can learn differently. One can learn, says Reb Zalman Nechemia, that the reason why, in this case, the woman is potter if she aborts herself and will be potter if she tells the doctor to abort, is because we never found anybody paying for damaging themselves. In other words, if you kick yourself, no matter if you kick yourself very hard and you break your own leg, you're not chayav to pay for breaking your leg. So here too, since the woman is damaging herself, she's not chayav to pay for damaging herself. So she says, based on this, we're going to have distinctions in what exactly has to be paid when. And if you turn the page to the final page, page 5, in 6, in the sikum, in the summary, me'ata, if this is the case, rofeshi pilav lodos, if the doctor did the abortions birshu same with the permission of the mother, lefia derech hashniyos shekasavnu, according to the second approach, that somebody who damages themselves not chayev to pay, chayev gam lor semech. In this case, lor semech will say the doctor is chayev. Kiloim atzma mezika, because the mother wasn't the one who damaged herself. The doctor damaged. Vilu aderech harishona, but according to the first approach, that it's like I gave you permission to rip my clothes. Ler sameach potter. Then according to sameach, the doctor's potter as well. Mishumazik vishus, because he damaged with permission. But all this is only true according to the Rambam, according to Yerushalmi's interpretation, that the woman owns the fetuses. Avala Rosh, according to the Rosh, who we mentioned before is Tosfos, She'enkos Chusleim, who holds that the fetuses are owned not by the mother but by the father. The Chela Ezra Kolim Das Rambam, there's another explanation like that, which holds that way in the Rambam. Ki as Chus Harishoni Sushalav, that the primary ownership is the father's. Chayav hamazik la'av, the mazik has to pay the father, or shusa aim, and the permission which the mother gives, eino mishana davar, won't make a difference. What about the other way around, though? If the father gave permission to abort, but not the mother, so then it's the exact opposite. If it could be, then in that case, Tosfos will hold your potter from paying. Why? Because the father owns the fetuses. But the Rambam might hold, according to Yer Samech, that you have to pay the mother, because the mother owns the fetuses. Hi, normally the father gets the money. That's only where both the mother and father didn't want it, and somebody else came, a third party, and did it. But here where the father was the transgressor, and he went to the had abortion done against the will of the mother, could be in that case the father would have to pay the mother for having the abortion done. In any event, after all these discussions back and forth, let's see his final conclusion. Sikum, on the bottom, on the next side here on the left. Aleph, hamazik ubar, somebody who damages an ubar, damages. Vanola ba'amum, and he's born with a defect. L'das ha-rosh v'ramor, according to the Rosh and the Ramor, l'fi darkein, the way we explained. Chai v'dmei nezeg ubar atzmo, you pay the child himself when he grows up. I'm going to skip the parentheses. V'mi pila imo. And if for some reason there was a miscarriage which wasn't related to the actual damage, Yorei Sha'av is the man, Ezek, then the father who's the heir gets that value. L'das HaRambam Shulchan Aruch, according to Rambam Shulchan Aruch, Safik im Achov HaChayev, we don't know if the person is Chayev. Gam im Chayev, even if he is Chayev, Safik im Chayev L'Aviv, it's not sure if we're Chayev to the father, or Lubra Atzmor to the fetus himself. Kshukayim, when the fetus survives. And if the mother miscarried shlomach hasamach and not a result of the wound, nearer shalatzad shechayev l'uber atzmo, if he chayev to the fetus himself, potter, then you don't have to pay in this case because the fetus didn't survive. Shkein l'rambam, uber ainu yorish, because according to the Rambam, not according to the Rosh, uber does not inherit v'ainu marsh and doesn't pass on inheritance to others. L'fiyah or sameach, shebehez b'ram, according to the sameach, efshir shalom d'mei nezek l'aim, it's possible that you pay the nezek to the mother. If the uber was miscarried within 40 days, for sure, the uber doesn't inherit, nor does it cause others to inherit. Therefore, according to the Rosh Ramah, that the chiyuv is towards the fetus, potter, there's nobody to pay. L'das HaRambam v'Shulchan Aruch, according to the Rambam v'Shulchan Aruch, she'achiv u'l'aviv, that the chiyuv is to the father, sofikim uber kazeo begedel liyoder, we're still not sure since it's within 40 days, if this is the type of fetus, she'amakeu chayiv l'aviv, where you pay for it. Gimel gaim uber mamzer, even if the child is a mamzer, chayiv makeu ben mev lotus l'aviv, you pay to the father. Dalit rofe she'ipil sa uber b'shul sa'im, if the doctor did the abortion with the mother's permission, bono machlokas ha'poskin l'fi ha'ram m'shulchan aruch, we have a machlokas. La'at lehez beras ma'ash m'mokam av ein le'im kos chus, if we hold that where there's a father, the mother has no rights, chayv min mev lotus lav, you pay only the father. Lehez beras sameach, koin tar sameach, sofik, we're not sure. Imeis av lifnei chavola, if the father died before the damage was done, before the abortion, then the mechila of the mother should work to pater the doctor from having to pay. The mother has no right at all in the child. You have to pay the father. There's no father. You pay to the next of kin, who are the heirs of the father and of the uber. Hey, imrak nizok uber v'nolu ba'amum, and if the uber was only damaged, was born a ba'amum, o shepili imo shlomach masmakar, his mother miscarried, not as a result of the wound, yishtad adin l'fi or samech, the loch will change according to her samech, ki achiyu b'nizokinu klapel, because you have to pay her, v'imochla, and she was moichel. If you did the abortion with the permission of the father, you don't have to pay. Because the father who's in charge was Michael. You have to pay. You can't be Michael ahead of time because it's the mother's. According to the Rosh and Ramah, in fact, they hold its potter because it belongs to the father as well. All right. Omna says whatever according to his own logic, Shita, which we didn't see. Let's not get into that. Zayinim Raknizo Ka'ubar, again, if the child's only damage is Shtana Din Lefi Yor Samech Bezber Rambam, then also, according to Yor Samech, it's possible Hainish Chayit Meir Nezek Laim that you're going to have to pay the mother. There's no conclusion here. He just brings down all the sides. It's too new a machlokas to actually have been decided. Someday maybe these things will be decided.